Welcome to St. Louis on the Air. The Urban League of Metropolitan St. Louis has a new top executive. He is a familiar face in St. Louis. Michael McMillan, a former alderman, left his job as city license collector earlier this month to man the helm at the Urban League. He replaces Jim Buford, who held the post for some 28 years before retiring earlier this year. Buford's record during his almost three decades has been universally acknowledged as having had significant impact on the community. Now McMillan has to step into those shoes. He joins me in studio to talk about where he intends to take the Urban League and about the challenges it faces. Michael McMillan, welcome. Nice to see you.
Well, thank you very much, Don. It's a pleasure to be here.
Congratulations on the job. I know that it was sought after by a number of people. So congratulations
to
you.
Well, thank you very much. I'm honored to be in the position.
Yeah, it's a big job, isn't it? You step into the shoes, as I mentioned, of Jim Buford. How difficult is it to do that? He's been there 28 years. He had a great impact on this community. You're going to be compared to Jim Buford for a good long while, I would think.
Well, Mr. Buford is a living icon, and he has done so much for St. Louis. He grew the agency from $2.5 million to $23 million, from about 40 staff to 200 staff. So really, he is almost irreplaceable in terms of his asset status to the Urban League, and he has definitely done a tremendous job of trying to help me in this transition and is going to continue to be an asset to the organization and be an advisor to me as I continue to try to learn all of the different specifics of all of our different programs and work with all our different partners.
And he's still there every day, you tell me? You just can't get rid of the guy, right?
No, we are very, very pleased that Mr. Buford has decided to stay on as a consultant through the month of August, and he has made himself available after that. In fact, soon we are going together with our board chair, Deborah Denham, to the 50th anniversary of the March on Washington on behalf of the local affiliate, of course, and as part of Marc Morial's push to have the National Urban League and all of its members and affiliates come out and support that effort.
Yeah. What will you be looking to him for during this transition? You assumed the job on August 5th, I think it was.
Yes.
And he'll be there through August. What will you be looking specifically for from him?
Well, he's been giving me some very in-depth analysis about all of our different programs, all of our different partners, our funding streams, our relationship with the National Urban League, our staff and our programs, our different locations that we have throughout the entire region with 10 different facilities, and a number of other different dynamics in terms of the history of the Urban League, where it was when he got there, and his advice as to some of the things that we can do in the future.
You're no stranger to the Urban League. You've been in and around it for a good long while.
I have been. Luckily for me, my late uncle, Colonel Gates, was chairman of the board.
I didn't realize that you were related to Colonel Gates.
Yes, he was chairman of the board in 1968 under Whitney Young nationally. And he and my aunt actually hosted Whitney Young at their home and worked with the Urban League. And when I was 10 years old, he was a mentor to me, and he told me that I should join the Urban League and the NAACP. Once I turned 16 with my own job so that I could pay my own membership with my own money. And I took his advice and became a youth member of the Urban League when I was 16. I'm a beneficiary of the programs of the Urban League. When I went to St. Louis University, they gave me a Lesley scholarship so that I could have some financial assistance to go to school. Later on, I had the pleasure of working with Mr. Buford on being on his board, serving there for 6 years, including the executive committee. And then I became a life member. We started a scholarship fund there later on for one of the residents in the community that unfortunately had passed away from cancer right in this neighborhood. And we've worked on a number of different projects and auxiliaries from the Federation of Black Units to the Guild to the Young Professionals to PROYA. And I'm proud to be a member for the past 26 years.
Aside from your uncle and some others, certainly, what has motivated you? You've dedicated a good part of your life to the social services, if you will.
Well, I would say a very significant reason why I decided to get involved in public life was I went to St. Louis University High School. And every day the Jesuits would tell us that we needed to be a man for others, and that we needed to give back, we needed to make a difference, we needed to use our talents and skills to try to help others, and that we needed to follow in the example of St. Ignatius. And I took that very seriously and started volunteering with a number of different charities and activities, and it eventually turned into a career.
Yeah, part of which was political, running for elective office. I read an interview you did with the St. Louis Beacon in which you were asked if this perhaps is a stepping stone to another political office.
Oh, absolutely not. Absolutely not.
You're out of that. You're out of that game.
I'm retired. Right? Yeah, I'm retired from running for office.
The problems that this community faces are significant, and I wonder how different that they are than when your uncle first introduced you to this world. Do you think there's been much improvement in race relations, for instance, in this community, and in poverty conditions and things of the kinds of things, education, the kinds of things that the Urban League is interested in?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, there's no question that we have made progress. There are obviously still issues that center around trying to help those who are in need, especially in the inner city where we have such a high job unemployment rate, where we have a high concentration of low-income people, where we have issues surrounding education, employment opportunities, lack thereof. And how can the Urban League and the United Way and all its member agencies work to try to address those issues, not only here in the city of St. Louis, but in St. Louis County, St. Clair County, East St. Louis, and the rest as a region? Because many of the same issues exist, but obviously race relations have evolved. My uncle was a perfect example of someone who started off working for the government in the post office and then having his own business, and the evolution of the civil rights movement giving him the kind of opportunity to become a very successful business person and co-found the first African-American-owned bank in the state of Missouri.
Gateway Bank, right?
Yes, Gateway Bank and Lismark Distributing Company and a lot of other real estate holdings that he had. And it was the work of organizations like the Urban League and the NAACP that provided the capacity for him and all of the other African-American entrepreneurs and Hispanic and others that have been able to succeed and do well. I mean, obviously, St. Louis is now home to the number one African-American-owned company in the entire country, Worldwide Technology, where you could not have even conceived a multi-billion dollar company that was owned by a black person years ago. And now Mr. Stewart has taken it to a $5.2 billion company.
And Dr. Suggs is doing a pretty good job with a paper that's number one in its category, right?
Yes. We're very proud to have the number one African-American newspaper in the entire United States right here in the city of St. Louis.
Talking about some of those problems that you identified a moment or two ago, what can the Urban League do? Let's just take one example, the employment situation, which is dire, particularly in the African-American community and particularly during this particular time. What can the Urban League do to help deal with this?
Well, the Urban League has historically been and currently is and will remain a source of jobs and economic opportunity. It is our role to train people, get them prepared to be able to get into the workforce, give them the correct skills so that they can be meaningful employees to different companies. And it's going to be incumbent upon us as an organization to learn the trends that are out there in hiring so that we make sure that we take people and train them in the manner that would be best for companies so that they have the best workforce available. So our job training, our job readiness, our GED class is helping people to get through college because it's all tied together. As we know, there are so many jobs that if you cannot click on the online application that, yes, I do have a bachelor's degree, your application will not even be considered. So it's going to be incumbent upon us to work based on our 95-year history here in the city of trying to help people get an education so that they then have the capacity to apply for these jobs and then train those who need them to work with corporations, unions, and everyone that we can to try to bring all of those resources to bear to try to help those who are in need, because there are not many problems in a person's life that a good job cannot fix.
How do you help them get a better education?
Well, that obviously is a very significant issue right now. We have the city school district that has been provisionally accredited, and of course we have the issues going on in North County in terms of the districts that are not accredited, and then the busing issue, and obviously those are very significant issues currently. And our role has been to try to provide resources to all of these districts and serve as a support system to try to provide them with manpower, with skills, with funding, with working with the business community to involve them as a resource to the community, and then to provide additional programs and training to people in the different programs. Of course, we also have the Head Start program here in the city of St. Louis that we've operated for a number of years that has been very successful.
You mentioned busing, And we had a communication recently in conjunction with the situation involving Melville and the Francis Howell School District, in which we were asked not to use the term busing in connection with this because it had a negative connotation. How do you feel about that?
Well, I think historically there are many different strong feelings about busing in St. Louis, historically from the 80s, and people feeling as though their children were not given an opportunity, and there are many different opinions about what has happened over a course of time. Many people felt as though it weakened the city school system. Many people felt as though those county districts that had to participate were weakened by the infusion of inferior students. And there were any number of different stereotypes that came about over those decades. And I think that we as a region have to learn to grow. And the fact that any one area is in need means that we are all in need and that we're all in this together. Because if we go out of town and we say we're from Florissant, people may not know where we're coming from or where we are. But if we say we're from St. Louis, they know that. And so we are all in this together. And as we look towards the future, I think the Urban League is going to play a key role along with a number of our different partners in terms of working as a collaborative effort with the different school districts to try to provide assistance to them so that they can get accredited and provide our children with quality education.
One of the things that that we hear in conjunction with this latest situation of moving kids around is the fact that I think the figure is about $23 million that it's costing to do this in terms of the tuition exchanges and the transportation. Wouldn't that money be better spent in the unaccredited districts to try to bring them up to speed?
Oh, well, of course, those are definitely districts that are in need, and it's my understanding that they both will be in very significant financial problem status if this $23 million is gone, and in some cases may even bring about bankruptcy. So that obviously is not good because that's making the situation far worse than it is, and it's going to devalue the various properties that people have and they have invested in and put their whole life into. And I think that we need to do something to fix this, and we all need to be a part of the solution.
Can the Urban League play a role in trying to fix it?
I think the Urban League definitely can play a role in terms of trying to provide some assistance to the school districts themselves and try to help them get on track. And I'm looking to meet with all of those stakeholders because we obviously operate in St. Louis City, St. Louis County, and St. Clair County. And that is definitely on my agenda as part of my listening tour.
Michael McMillan is our guest. He is the new CEO and president of the Urban League of Metropolitan St. Louis. He's only been on the job for a couple of weeks now, if that, since the 5th of August, and already has a lot of ideas about what the Urban League should be doing and where it's going. We'll continue this conversation in just a moment. We'd like to make you a part of it, and you can do so by giving us a call at 382-8255. That's 382-TALK. Send us an email, if you like, to talk@stlpublicradio.org, and we'll take a tweet to it, STL On Air. Back in just a moment. This is St. Louis On the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. And welcome back as we continue our conversation with Michael McMillan, who is the new head of the Urban League here in St. Louis. Before we continue that conversation, though, here are some of the stories our St. Louis Public Radio newsroom is following. U.S. Senator Dick Durbin of Illinois was in East St. Louis this morning urging police to use a free federal program to trace guns used in crimes. Members of the United Mine Workers of America have rallied outside Peabody Energy's downtown St. Louis headquarters despite reaching tentative health care and collective bargaining agreements with Patriot Coal. Union leaders say the spinoff company, which was created by Peabody Coal in 2007, doesn't have enough assets to meet the continuing demands. And the president of the American Federation of Teachers is in St. Louis, highlighting the expansion of early childhood education in St. Louis public schools. Join St. Louis Public Radio this afternoon for local and regional news and throughout the day on our website at stlpublicradio.org. Now back to our conversation with Michael McMillan. We've done many programs on the subject of racial polarization in St. Louis, and there are many people who have told us that it is the area's most significant problem, and in fact, St. Louis has a bigger problem than most other urban areas. Do you agree, and what can we do about it?
Well, I think, obviously, St. Louis has a history of racial discrimination and segregation, and things are better than they have been, but they are not done. We still have racism, and we still have a very segregated society. There was a recent study after the census that showed that St. Louis was one of the most segregated cities in the country. So I think that organizations like the Urban League historically have been and continue to be and will be in the future a conduit for black and white, Latino, and all other societies coming together, so that we can have a dialogue and bring people together and work on our commonalities and how we can improve as a region as opposed to what are our differences. And I think that we've had a great success with that from our board standpoint, from our membership, from many different organizations that the Urban League supports, but our job is not done.
Don't you get tired of hearing that, though, hearing that this problem persists in this community?
Well, I think many people get tired of it for many different reasons. I think the victims of it don't get tired of it because they feel like that it needs to be addressed and it needs to be resolved. Yeah. I would love for us to get to a point where we can focus on something else other than that, but it obviously still exists.
That's what I mean by getting tired of it, that it's not put behind everybody. It is still out there.
Yes.
I'd like – this is somewhat far removed from the Urban League of Metropolitan St. Louis, but it's gotten a lot of attention recently. I'm interested in your take on this rodeo incident down at the State Fair. There's been a disciplinary action against the clown that was involved in this what was called this insult to President Obama. But he was cheered by a large portion of the audience at that event. What's your take on that?
Well, I think it was very unfortunate. I think it was appropriate that he was dismissed and fired from his position because the mockery that was made of the President of the United States and how inappropriate it was extremely inappropriate for anyone to do. And obviously we live in a society with free speech and we have the capacity to do that. But there are ramifications for your actions. And I think what they did in terms of dismissing him was appropriate.
What about the reaction of the audience?
Extremely unfortunate. I mean, obviously, we live in a very polarized nation in general in terms of the philosophies of Democrat and Republican. And if you get 53% of the vote in a national election, it's a landslide. So that means that 47% of the people did not vote for you. So we definitely live in a very divided nation, regardless of whoever is president and who is in Congress. But in terms of this, I think there has been a racial undertone and overtone in terms of some of the mockery that's been made of President Obama in the past when they've called him a monkey and any number of other things that were completely inappropriate to call the President of the United States.
How much traffic does the Urban League here have with our state legislature?
Well, I know Mr. Buford had a number of different relationships with members of the House and Senate in the Missouri legislature, and I plan to continue working with all of the different state agencies where we have contracts and where we have relationships because we want to make sure that the state is providing resources to those who are in need. I've already had the privilege of meeting with a representative of Governor Nixon's staff to talk about different opportunities that the governor would like to provide for those who are in need. And we will work with anyone, regardless of their affiliation, as a nonpartisan institution to try to provide resources to those who are in need here in the city, county, and St. Clair County.
The divisions about which you spoke a moment or two ago also exist in the state legislature. I have to assume that would make your job that much more difficult.
Yes, it would. They do seem to be more contentious in Jefferson City than they have been in a very long time.
Taking their lead, perhaps, from
Washington.
Their colleagues in Washington.
Yes.
Well, there's plenty to talk about with you, Michael McMillan, and we've talked about some of the negative qualities about life in this community. Let's talk about some of the more positive. What do you consider to be the positive things that you're going to be very happy to deal with and to tend during your term here?
Well, one of the things about the Urban League that is so significant in terms of how it appeals to not only me but to so many others is its rich history. You're talking about an organization that has 95 years of history here in the city of St. Louis, over 100 years nationally, who has been the premier social service, not-for-profit agency in the African-American community, but serving everyone. And last year we served 78,000 people. We have 63 board members. We have about 175 employees, almost a $20 million budget. And we have been a United Way agency all of this time. And we have a huge outreach in terms of the number of people that we serve and the number of people that we impact. And we want to continue to grow that and make sure that we do even more to be of assistance to the community, because the potential is limitless. We just have to have the right people with the right programs and the right capacity and the right funding to make sure that we can provide for those who are in need. And as we discussed earlier, in terms of the number of people who are unemployed, the number of people who need a better education, the number of people who need food, clothing, shelter, a housing department, we are going to continue to be that conduit for them so that we can give them the assistance that they need to get their lives back on track.
You're involved, as you indicated earlier, with in St. Louis County, St. Louis City, and also over in the Metro East. How does it differ from place to place? I mean, what are the priorities in the county as opposed to the city, and the city of, as opposed to St. Clair County?
Well, I will be able to better answer that question.
This is almost unfair. I mean, you've been on the job for 2 weeks.
If we have an interview as a follow-up 6 months from now, because the first thing on my agenda has been and continues to be what I am calling a listening tour, where I plan to go to all 10 facilities, meet with every single employee, meet with all of our board members, all of our stakeholders, our donors, the United Way, our government contract agencies from the city, the state, the federal government, St. Louis County, St. Clair County, the state of Illinois, and make sure that I get an in-depth understanding of how they view the Urban League, what we're doing right, what we can do better, and how we can continue to serve those who are in need. And 6 months from now, I'll have a much better answer for you.
Is that the time frame? Is it going to take 6 months to really get a full understanding, appreciation, or whatever, of what the job is and what the needs are?
I hope that it won't take that long. The other thing that we're trying to do is to conclude our 5-year strategic plan for the agency itself. And by the time we engage all of the people that I just mentioned and the general public, we plan to then unveil our strategic plan to the community and then implement that and be very aggressive about how we try to build on the huge success that we have already.
Can you give us any sense of what some of the priorities might be in that over that 5-year period?
Well, we definitely want to maintain our fiscal responsibility. We want to grow our programs and services, and we want to look at new opportunities, whether it's for seniors, for youth, for combining and collaborating some of the programs that we do with other agencies so that we can be as effective as possible in terms of how we work with our young people, trying to make sure that we get our message out in social media and that we appeal to a younger base of people so that they will be aware of the program services and opportunities that are available to them with the Urban League.
I did notice in that interview that I mentioned earlier in the Beacon that you did, that the outreach of the young people is a priority of yours. Can you be more specific as to how you do that?
Well, I'd like to go meet them where they are. I'd like to go to various schools, talk on the college campuses, try to recruit members there, meet with other young professional organizations, meet with various fraternities and sororities, and try to let them know that there is a place for them at the Urban League, and we would love for them to join our new lights and our young professionals and be highly engaged. And we have some of the best chapters in the terms of our auxiliary in the entire country. Our young professionals have won awards. Our new lights are highly recognized. And we can always use more people to give back and make a difference. There's some very sharp young people that we have involved in the Urban League already, and we can build that.
It's very important to any organization to recruit the young. I mean, that's if you're going to flourish,
yes,
that has to happen. What about this young professionals group? Tell me about that.
Well, I myself am no longer eligible. I used to be involved in what was called PROYA, the Progressive Young Adults, years ago, and then was a member of the Urban League Young Professionals. But you have to rotate off after you pass 39. So now I'm just a supporter of the young professionals. But we have a very dynamic president, Evan Krause. And we have a former president, Kira Van Nile, who was just elected to a regional office herself here for the National Young Professionals. And we have a host of young people who have a variety of different expertises that they bring to the table, where they have a Young Blacks Give Back campaign where they volunteer and help many different other agencies by doing neighborhood cleanups, by volunteering their time, helping in the food pantry, helping with all the Urban League events, helping with our clothing drives, providing funding for those who are in need. And we want to look at ways that we can improve that and that the agency can be of more assistance as well as we go towards the future and look at more scholarship opportunities, possible internship opportunities, job placement, assistance for them to go to college, et cetera, and trying to wrap all those things together.
You know, I think many people may feel that the Urban League, its basic focus is on minorities, on people of color, Hispanics, what have you. What about service to the white community?
Well, the Urban League's clientele is approximately 89% to 90% African American, and has always been a civil rights agency. This primary focus has been helping African Americans, but we help everyone, and we are always available to provide whatever assistance we can to those in need, regardless of race, religion, color, or creed.
Do you think that I'm right in thinking that most people have certain assumptions that may or may not be accurate?
Well, yeah. As the second oldest civil rights organization in the country, our mission has been to improve the African-American community. So people would be accurate in that assumption historically. But, for example, the president of the Young Professionals that I just mentioned is not African-American. And he has worked his way up and been elected by his peers, who primarily are, to be the leader of that organization and is doing a great job. And we welcome all involvement. The Urban League board is the most diverse board of directors in the entire region. Everyone is represented there.
What about the league's relationship with the business community? How does that work?
Well, the Urban League has an excellent relationship with the business community. Civic Progress, members of RBC, RCGA, and the general public have been extremely supportive of the Urban League since its inception. And it's that kind of support that has given us the ability to serve those 78,000 people that I referenced earlier, because in addition to all of the government contracts that we have, we are a proud United Way member agency, and we receive a huge allotment from the United Way to provide for those who are in need, and we receive a huge amount of support from the corporate community and individuals, and we're looking forward to expanding that as we go forward.
You mentioned a moment or two ago that the work you've done and are doing with young people, but you also mentioned the elderly.
Yes.
What kind of programs do you have going there?
Well, we have the LIHEAP program where we provide energy assistance to those who are in need, and we specifically focus on seniors. And we have seniors that come to our food pantry and to our clothing area, and we try to provide them with whatever resources we can possibly do. But we're looking to future opportunities to expand that because we have a growing elderly population, and many of them are on very fixed incomes and have to make some very tough choices between food and rent and medicine. And we want to be more of an asset to make sure that we provide as many resources as possible to them because they deserve it.
We're talking with Michael McMillan, who is the brand new CEO and president of the Urban League of Metropolitan St. Louis. We have some lines open if you'd like to get into this conversation. What would you like to see on the Urban League agenda? This is a good opportunity to let us know what that might be and also to get to meet and talk personally with Michael McMillan. 382-8255 is the number. That's 382-TALK. You can send us an email at talk@stlpublicradio.org. And as I mentioned before, we'll take that tweet at STL on air. The thing that I notice with regard to the population that you're serving, primary population you're serving, you mentioned it, is the food situation is a big part of it. There are food deserts in our community. This is the 21st century in the United States of America, and yet there are food deserts. People don't have enough to eat. Programs that you might have that would be helpful in this regard.
Well, I think that the Urban League can play a role in terms of working with our corporate sponsors and some of the people that we have on our board and others to try to change that over a course of time. You're right, we have food deserts where it is so far for someone to go to a grocery store that's full service that they end up going to many different neighborhood stores and buying food that does not add to their overall health, and that contributes to high rates of high blood pressure, diabetes, and many other illnesses that affect the African-American community and poor people in general all over this country. So I think that Urban League can definitely play a role in that as well, and we could work on projects like the Schnooks family has it in different locations and Save a Lot has over a course of time, like the Martin Luther King Shopping Plaza at Grand and Martin Luther King here that changed that dynamic in that community, because obviously all of these people are eating every day. So they have the economic capacity to buy groceries, and they are buying them. And it would be a much better way for them to live to have the opportunity to actually have a full service grocery store in their community that they could access.
This has been a problem for a long time, hasn't it? It really has. Well, this brings health care into the equation. What about your involvement in helping people stay healthier, aside from making food available or helping make food available?
Well, in addition to the food pantry, we have done some fitness classes and trying to encourage people to exercise and trying to work on many different health initiatives. Mr. Buford has served on the Connect Care Board for many years and is very involved in the health care of the entire region and how we formulate a way to serve the poor, and I look forward to doing the same thing because it's obviously an essential component of the overall success of any community.
Right. I have some phone calls coming in. I'm going to take a break first so we don't have to interrupt a call with this necessary break. We'll do that. Come back and take those calls. We're talking with Michael McMillan, the president and CEO of the Urban League of Metropolitan St. Louis. Back in just a moment. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Hello again. Back to our conversation with Michael McMillan, the new head of the Urban League of Metropolitan St. Louis. Let's go right to the phones. We'll start with Ron calling from St. Louis. Ron, thanks for being with us. Go ahead.
Thanks for having me on the air. Yeah, I'd like to know, I'm a 65-year-old adult, and I lost my job in 03, and I've just been like bouncing around from one job to another. What kind of programs would you have for someone like me?
Well, Ron, we definitely have an employment program, and if you have the opportunity, I'd love to give you our number and have you to call, and we can work with you this afternoon on trying to get you in and have an appointment to meet with our jobs department so that we can try to help you get back fully employed.
Oh, that'd be great.
It's 615-3600. And if you cannot reach anyone right away, please ask for me, and we will try to get you a meeting set up right away so that we can work with you and try to get you back into the workforce.
That'd be great. I appreciate that. Thanks a lot.
Ron, thank you. Good luck to you. I'll just advise everyone, because we have some listeners out of the area, that, of course, is the 314 area code 615-3600, and we'll get that number on our website at stlpublicradio.org so folks can follow up on it. Make that call this afternoon, Ron. Let's take another call. This time it'll be Ramsey calling from St. Louis. Ramsey, thanks for being with us. Go ahead.
Thank you, Don, and thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
And, Michael, congratulations.
Thank you.
This is Tower Village calling.
Oh, thank you. Thank you very much. Please give my regards to everyone.
I certainly shall. Don, sort of skated over of what the Urban League is involved in. We're involved in the Federation of Block Units, which is a subsidiary, and work with the Urban League because our advisor is Victoria Reeves, who's the vice president of the Urban League. And our emphasis right now, and Michael's on it, in a discussion at our meeting in August, is more attention to the elderly and drawing some of the younger people in, because that's our big challenge in the inner city. I'm North St. Louis, and it is a big challenge because of basically 60% of some of our neighborhoods are nothing but seniors and have some big challenges on living independently. So I just want to say congratulations, look forward to working with them, and anything else we can do to make this a better town.
Thank you so much.
Rams, yes, thank you for the call. Well, let's bring in Scott. He's calling from Chesterfield. Go ahead, Scott.
Yeah. According to the Economic Policy Institute, college-educated blacks are twice as likely to be unemployed as college-educated whites. And, so obviously discrimination still exists in the job market. And also, there's like a million, well, or 1.6 million homeless kids in America. And I'm just, you know, there's so much that needs to be done. You know, I mean, these are kids that, you know, they could wind up being bad students or even criminals. And, you know, and it seems like the House of Representatives and Congress are just, they're not going to do anything about this at all. And I'd like you to comment on that.
Well, I think as we mentioned earlier, obviously we're in a very unique period of time where diplomacy and statesmanship seem to be things of the past, and the president and the Congress don't seem to be able to get along, nor the governor and the House of Representatives and the Senate here in Missouri. So I think it's going to be incumbent upon us to not only attempt to try to navigate all of the gridlock between those two elements, but also to try to come up with as many different creative, innovative ways to provide resources for those who are in need that don't involve the government, because we may end up in a situation where we have continued cuts from a federal and a state standpoint as social service agencies all across the country, and we'll have to be even more creative about funding, about getting volunteers involved, corporate involvement, philanthropic involvement, and trying to utilize all of that for the benefit of those in need. Because as you just pointed out, those statistics are very, very frightening in terms of the number of homeless youth and the discrimination that exists in employment and every other problem that we know that we have as a city, a state, and a nation.
Well, you talk about homeless youth. Again, we've done programs on this. It's really stunning how many kids in our community here today who go to school every day are homeless. I mean, it just boggles the mind to think, once again, that this is happening. In terms of the resources at your disposal, what about political resources? I mentioned working with the legislature, but, you know, if things are going to change, then some people who are in office need to be out of office, perhaps. Are you equipped as an organization to get involved politically at the grassroots level?
Well, the organization does not involve itself in any politics, but the auxiliaries such as the Federation of Block Units have definitely been at the forefront of trying to advocate for any number of different social service issues, housing issues, economic policies, and things over the years as an advocacy arm of the Urban League to try to make sure that they speak for those who have issues that are not able to express themselves and not able to have a venue. So the Federation will continue to do that.
And I'm sure the Federation is concerned, as many people are, with regard to various attempts to establish more control over who gets to vote and who doesn't with voter ID and things of that nature.
Absolutely.
Yeah. North Carolina just passed a biggie, just signed a bit. The governor just signed a big one there. Back to the phones, and we have lines open, 382-8255. Let's bring in Joseph. He's calling from Belleville. Go ahead, Joseph.
Good afternoon. I wanted to know, I'm a carrier, and I happen to deliver a package to the Urban League in Fairview Heights, Illinois. I was surprised to find out that they moved from East St. Louis to Fairview Heights, which is basically a suburb. And I wonder how do they still plan to reach the kids, the young people, the youth, young adults in an area that is heavily populated with unemployment, East St. Louis is, considering the fact that they've moved from East St. Louis to Fairview Heights, and what precipitated that move?
Unfortunately, I can't really speak to that because that happened before I came on board on August the 5th. But I would definitely love to speak with you at length, and please feel free to call the Urban League, and we can try to provide you with all of the information available in regard to your question. As Don mentioned, the number is 314-615-3600, and we'd be happy to talk to you at length about that.
Is there anything, though, so there are no plans to reach the kids or to reach the youth? Or is that something that's contingency or anything being done now?
There are definitely plans to continue to provide the service and reach the youth and reach the programs, and we have a weatherization grant that we are implementing with the state of Illinois, and we have other programs that are operated out of that office. But I don't know of any immediate plans to open an additional office in East St. Louis, but I can definitely get into depth on that information and let you know.
Would you give me that number again?
It's 314-615-3600.
Okay, Joseph, you square with that?
Yeah, I don't know whether to be disappointed or whatever, but I mean, I understand what he's saying. It's just that I was shocked to find that the office had moved. I understand, you know, there may be some extenuating circumstances that I'm not aware of that he might be able to explain. I was just shocked and kind of upset that the Urban League moved from the urban area to what we consider the suburb. You know, the reason that I moved from East St. Louis had nothing to do with the state of the city. It just, I had an opportunity to move. I'm a pastor in East St. Louis now, and I go back to East St. Louis every Wednesday and Thursday and minister. And so heart is still in East St. Louis. I was born and raised there. I've raised five children there that have all done well academically and that are, you know, soaring. So I know that everything that is, that is characterized of East St. Louis is not really the case. We did it with the help of people that were there in the city. So I'm just concerned. So I will try to follow up. Maybe, as I said, maybe he has something that he can explain to me that will help, you know, allay some of my concerns.
Give him that call, 314-615-3600, and thanks for calling. I think what Joseph may be saying is there should be an office over there in East St. Louis.
Well, I know we've had a presence in East St. Louis. The Urban League was actually founded out of the East St. Louis race riots. And we definitely have a number of different programs and have added staff to the East St. Louis and St. Clair County office over a course of time. But in terms of the move, that happened prior to me coming on board, so I would have to get some additional information.
I didn't realize that this was born out of the 1917 riots in East St. Louis.
Yes.
Can you give me a little more information on that?
Well, the organization, as I said, is 95 years old, and it was created after the East St. Louis riots.
Right.
And we started with that 95-year history, born out of that racial conflict. And as you know, many people from East St. Louis came over to St. Louis.
Fled,
yeah, right. Because their lives were in jeopardy. And it was a tragic incident for this whole region, especially for Illinois and East St. Louis. And it really created the Urban League and the need for the social services and the capacity to provide an agency to deliver to those who are in need, especially people of color, obviously.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You mentioned that you're going to be going to Washington for the 50th anniversary of the I Have a Dream speech. Tell me a little bit about how that's organized and who all is going to be going from our area.
Well, the Urban League is helping to sponsor a bus where we are getting all of our different auxiliaries from the Young Professionals to the Guild to the Federation to the New Lights involved and our staff to go to Washington to be in support of the civil rights movement and the continuation of the fight for justice and commemorate Dr. King's speech and also all that happened at that point and what has happened and the progress that has occurred in the past 50 years. And our national president, Mark Morial, is taking a very significant leadership role in this, trying to provide all of the different affiliates with information and resources and trying to galvanize support so that the Urban League movement can have a strong representation in Washington because, as we know, Whitney Young was extremely involved in the original March on Washington and played a key role and spoke and was supportive of Dr. King and his mission and A. Philip Randolph and Bayard Rustin. And wanted to make sure that the Urban League was at the forefront of the fight for justice, and we want to make sure that we continue that legacy.
It'll be interesting to see how many people show up for this observance, if you will. I'm sure it's going to be pretty well attended. Back to some of the programs now, and going back to our earlier caller, who seemed to be concerned about programs for the youth. We've talked a little bit about that, but I know that one of the things that the Urban League is concerned about is much of the population is violence among the young. What sort of programs are in place to help deal with that?
Well, we have the Stop the Killing program and an anti-gang task force that the organization has worked on. Angelia Bills has been a conduit for trying to provide resources to the community and workshops and information and trying to train our young people to do a better job of handling stress and stressful situations and not let them turn violent, trying to give them alternate things to be involved with so that they don't have that much idle time on their hands. And, of course, we have any number of different summer programs to try to involve the youth so that they have something constructive to do so that they will not be tempted by all of the different things that happen when some of the young people end up in these violent different situations.
How closely might your organization work with the police department, for instance, on programs such as this?
We have a regional public safety task force where we have the city, the county, and all of the various policing districts involved so that we talk about how we can come together as a region and be an asset to each other and how we can collectively make sure that all of our different work is best utilized so that everyone can have the most benefit for the limited resources that they have.
You know, one of the things that people will point to with regard to getting anything done in this area is the fragmentation, the fact there are so many different jurisdictions. Does that come into play in the work that you do and the task force development and some of the programs you have?
Well, as of the past 6.5 days, no.
It's your fault. You accepted the invitation. So you're not aware of any kind of problem that would create?
No.
Yeah. Okay. Another area that I wanted to talk about that I know you're involved in deals with housing, helping people with housing, and particularly with foreclosures, which is a big problem now. How do you work that? What another task force, I assume?
Well, we have a project where we work with Fannie Mae, where we have housing staff that work to assist people with their foreclosures, to work with the banks, and to work as a collaborative to keep people in their homes. Just this week, I happened to run into a veteran who is disabled, who is trying to get himself back on his feet and trying to get housing. And we were able to get him placed in an apartment and get him out of temporary housing just within the past 2 days. And we are constantly doing that as an agency. Last year, I think we worked with about 3,000 people in total because there's such a great need, and we will continue to do that.
Well, I assume then that you're working with veterans as well. I mean, do you have a special operation dealing just with veterans?
We don't have a special program just for veterans at the Urban League, but we have the referral capacity to send them to the various agencies that do.
I have another call here I'm going to try to take as time gets away, and this one was from East St. Louis. Alonzo, go ahead, but it'll have to be quick, please.
Yes, Mike, congratulations again, and we're looking forward to working with you.
Thank you.
I just wanted to make one little note about the 1917 riots in East St. Louis. The situation was so bad that the Urban League could not be formed there, so it was formed in St. Louis. But have you also that the people who left or who were run out of East St. Louis set up Kenlock, and they were the first, it was the first African-American suburb in America.
Yes, you're right, and that's why we were formed in 1918 versus the actual riots of 1917. He's absolutely right.
Well, we've gotten a bit of a history lesson here today, but that's a portion of our regional history that people should pay some attention to. Very, very significant indeed. About a minute left. Your priority, your number one priority as you get settled in with Mr. Buford at your side?
Is to find out as much as I possibly can from him and our staff and our board and all of our stakeholders so that we can come up with the best strategic plan that we can for the community and implement as much as we possibly can in the next 5 years.
Have any surprises as you come in 6 or 7 days ago,
no.
Whatever it's been?
None at all.
Uh-huh. And the number one challenge as you see it at this point?
Finding new revenue for programs for the community.
Yeah. What sort of a budget does the Urban League have here?
Almost $20 million.
Wow. You spend it all, I'm sure.
Yes. Yeah. There's not much wiggle room at the end, if any.
Does your political background help you at all in this job?
Well, I think my work in government and work with representatives from the city, state, and federal basis would definitely be an asset as we look for grant opportunities. And we have the ability to meet and get to know people. In many cases, I have already worked with them and would love to continue those relationships now at the Urban League.
And, of course, now that you're looking for money, as all organizations always are, it's that much more difficult in today's economy, is it not?
Yes. Yes, it is.
Michael McMillan, thank you so much for being with us. Congratulations again on this post, and good luck to you in the next years. Maybe you'll get 28 out of this job as
thank
Jim
you.
Buford. He must have been about your age when he took that job. Is that right?
Yes.
All right. Well, we thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you.
Take care. Tomorrow on St. Louis on the Air, we'll talk with journalist Vanessa Gazzari about her new book detailing a program to win hearts and minds in a military social science experiment in the war in Afghanistan. It also shows that good intentions don't always work. Archived versions of past St. Louis on the Air programs are available for download or podcast at stlpublicradio.org. St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Thanks for listening. I'm Don Marsh.